So at MIT, it was a little bit different. We had already been working on figuring out state employees, remote state employees. We have a lot of research happening across the U.S. So we were a little bit ahead of the game in that respect. We had already registered in pretty much every state and had a policy that you could work remote from other states as long as, you know, your work allowed it. So we were already registered. To some extent, we were sort of self-insured on a lot of things. Massachusetts is very employee benefit friendly. So that means that, you know, our benefits are pretty high. And so we are covered in most states. We already provide the highest level of benefits or more. So we didn't have issues there. A few states like California, New York, we knew that there was probably going to be benefits we didn't offer. So we had a little bit of a risk there. So one of the things we worried about in states now is that there's a greater number of people in those states. So we might have had 5 people in California before, now we have maybe 25, and so our sort of self-insurance is a little bit higher. We haven't really found a good solution to that issue because there's not a whole lot of providers that we're willing to pay for that will provide those services statewide. We've been talking to some and they're in development, but nothing very comprehensive and affordable at this time. So that's just sort of an open risk area. Our biggest issue was internationally. So when we told everyone to go home, MIT's population is very international, and that meant they went to other countries. And then when we said, okay, come back, they couldn't get back. You know, they had visa issues, there was travel restrictions, all kinds of things. So a lot of people just couldn't come back. We had a process set up for students, and we had 400 requests to work or to study international, and over 200 each semester for employees and faculty even. So then we had to figure that out. And the longer you do it, of course, the more your employees are like, this is the status quo now, and I want to continue working internationally. And initially, a lot of the even the states, I think, maybe had a little leeway when COVID, you know, first happened. They weren't making you register in the state. They weren't saying you had a permanent establishment or a nexus. But as time went on, then, you know, people are out of money and they're looking for reasons to go and send a bill and say, you owe these penalties and taxes. Your employees are living here. You should be registered. And they're just hoping that people will pay it because they're out of money. So it became more of an issue. And now that international piece is going, we're pushing it, forcing it to the senior leadership to make a decision. Do we want to be an international, a global company, or do we want to only provide it to the people that can afford it, the departments that can afford it? And is that fair? And who's going to make those decisions? So that's where we are.
I feel like when you have those conversations too, right, do you want to be an international university? The answer from executive leadership and the people that publish your good stuff on your website are going to say yes, right? But then they present a dollar figure so associated with compliance with that. And then they're going to say, yeah, maybe not, right? Or maybe not today. So,
and I've learned that. So I've started putting on all the recommendations, who's going to pay for it? And that's when people go, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then they might have said yes to Professor X, but now they're like, well, couldn't he come back, though? And so they're having those conversations, and that does sort of change the whole landscape when you start adding the dollar figure.
So what departments were critical for you at MIT? Because at UCF, it was my office, it was HR, and it was general counsel. And if we didn't present kind of a combined force when it comes to talking to our executive leadership, which would be the president, provost, deans are very influential at UCF, that kind of stuff, I don't think we would have been successful. So who helped you out in this, or is it one man or one woman show?
We had a team as well. So we actually had an international people placement team. And it consists of our OGC tax. We have a global operations office and HR. And then we have an international provost office as well. So it's a team of about 10 people. And they just discussed every single case that came up. So every 200 requests went through an individual review. And we had developed that a while back. And I hate to say I was the person that kind of forced the issue, got to, you know, stepped on a few toes, but it finally got raised, and now it's in front of senior leadership because people hate change.
Yes. So some of the questions you see on the slides right now, after we kind of socialized and we talked about, can I just make them independent contractors? This is literally a quote from my dean of the College of Business. Let's just make them independent contractors.
Okay. Okay, we can
like
go then.
I went to your school, man. Like, you should know that that's not right. So anyway, that's the kind of resistance that you'll get, right? That was his solution. And like, literally when he said that, the provost is sitting here and the president's over there and my CFO's over there. And it took everything in me not to look at him and do this. Is that a serious question? Because, egos and stuff, right? So other questions, why can't we just tell everyone to use a P.O. box? what if people are in their summer homes? And when you talk about temporary work locations, and then you consider Nexus, pre-COVID, it was all over the place with every state that had an employee tax, right? Some states have 1 day, some states have like 3 months, some states have 6 months, right? You walk down the path of crazy trying to map it out. There was COVID relief, but when you sign a permanent telecommuting agreement, I would say that the COVID relief doesn't exist anymore, right?
No.
It's probably not there. So
almost all of the COVID relief had some sort of caveat that as long as this is temporary, so the minute you have an agreement saying that this is sort of the arrangement moving forward, you lose that protection.
Right.